Talking Kong, a cup of tea with an Englishman in San Diego. In conversation with Patrick Horvath.
Hi, this is Dan here at Los Angeles Comic Con 2023 with writer and illustrator of Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, Patrick Horvath. Kind of talking about the title as well as some other stuff. So, Patrick, how did the idea for the title come about?
The idea for the title came from, and I'm just going to apologize for my voice, it totally sounds crazy, from too much yelling. But anyway, so the title came from, it's an old 50s song from like the 1950s, it's a children's song, and the title of the song is Teddy Bear's Picnic, but it has a verse in it, or actually I guess it's part of the chorus, but it goes, it's like the second chorus, and it's beneath the trees where nobody sees, they hide and seek as long as they please, and that's the way the teddy bears have their picnic, and it's like so sinister to me when I heard it, because I think the way it sounded, like if you listen to the original recording of it, it's very like, it sounds very old-timey. The instrumentation is classic, and it just kind of sounds very much of an era. And the way that it, like even the most like sort of robust audio copy you can hear of it, like it doesn't even sound that great. So there's already something weird and sort of kind of has this patina over the audio. It seems, I don't know why, it seems sinister. And then I just remember the first time I heard it, it wasn't even that version of it. Like it was like a, just a children's compilation children's album or something.
Okay.
I was probably in my teens, so it's like the mid 90s. And then I heard it, and I was just like, what do they do beneath the trees? Like, what is it that they're doing that nobody sees? And I don't know why it's always stuck with me. And then flash forward, 20 years later, and I was just drawing something for fun. And it was this bear with an axe. And then I just kind of started, well, what would this bear be doing with an axe?
Yeah.
And then I kind of came up with the idea of like, oh, it'd be kind of funny if it was like a serial killer bear. I was thinking it would be really funny as if it was like a really ideal town and there was this bear that was a serial killer. Nobody, and it's just like everybody thought she was just an upstanding member of the community. And almost immediately, like all that kind of just came together. So the title was like a no-brainer. Like it's, yeah. Like it was a lightning bolt of like, oh yeah, this is Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees. And the teddy bear having their picnic. Like this is perfect. So that's how it all came together.
And then how did you come up with the idea for the actual story? Because it's, I mean, it's a lot of critical acclaim for it just out of nowhere.
Well, I mean, like, I'm always fascinated with serial killers. I mean, I think a lot of people are, so I'm not necessarily the minority there. But I personally love trying to make someone that seems unlikable on, you know, from like the obvious, for obvious reasons, like a killer,
right.
To make them the protagonist that you have to invest in somehow. And so that was kind of like, I was like, if I made it where you had a psychopath that had an existential breakdown because all of a sudden their way of life just got upended, like that would be very relatable for a lot of people who have their lives upended, especially with, you know, everything in recent years. So it kind of felt like it was a challenge, but at the same time, it also was very natural for me to go in that direction. I'm constantly pulled in just trying to take things, people, and whatever, and then just really have them come at odds with however they've set their life up.
Now, I know a lot of critical acclaim. Are you surprised by how much critical acclaim and the book that I believe it's gone to a second print already?
Yes.
Did that take you out of nowhere?
Yeah, it's a complete surprise. So this is my first like book with any publisher. And I'm incredibly grateful that IDW took a chance with me because I didn't, you know, I don't have a track record. My background is mainly in movies, and I write and direct like independent horror films, and that's fun. But even that, I haven't done in like a long time because I've honestly been focusing on drawing.
Yeah.
Right around like 2010, started drawing again.
Okay.
I didn't draw for the longest time. from like probably like the late 90s until 2010. I would like doodle or whatever, and that was about it.
Right.
And then after like the second feature I made while living in LA, I was just getting really antsy to be more creative on a faster timetable. These movies take forever. And so I was like, why don't I draw anymore? I don't know why I don't draw.
Right.
And then as soon as I started drawing again, I was like, I should just be making comics. Like, I don't know why I'm not. Like, I should have been making comics this whole time. I don't know why I wasn't. You know, in addition to films, I still love movies, but it's just like, it's another, comics is just another mode of storytelling.
Right.
That I, like, have totally not been, hadn't been doing. I did make comics in my teens,
okay.
You know, in the 90s. But I mean, like, you know, I just really, I don't know, I felt, it was just kind of hippie. Where I was like, I don't, you're completely neglecting, like, a whole part of, like, being an artist that I could be right now. And so, so that's kind of how it all kind of came together. But, like, I wasn't expecting my first book out to be, like, so widely well-received.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't, I don't, I mean, the thing is, too, is I'm sure you hear a lot, is that you're just, as a comic creator, you're at a table drawing by yourself for, like, a long time.
Right.
And since I'm also the writer, too, I have an editorial team with IDW. They're a trip.
Yeah.
And I lean on them completely. Like, I'm completely trusting in them. And I'll swing as wide as I can, and I'm trusting them to tell me, like, pump the brakes.
Right.
This doesn't make sense, etc. And it's been great so far. But even though they're like, this is great, this is one of the best first issues we've seen, you know, they're very excited about it. And I loved hearing that, but I'm also like, I'm sure they're just saying that because they're happy to work with me.
Yeah.
I'm a nice enough guy to work with, so I get that, whatever. And then once the first reviews started coming in, I was just bowled over. Like, I did not expect it to be that well received.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm just like trying not to, you know, jinx it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it looks whatever. Like an ideal little town. I mean, almost like, I believe it was Richard Friend.
No, Richard Scarry.
Scarry, thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah, of course, of course.
Yeah, very much like his
type totally,
of...
Oh, totally, totally.
Yeah.
Richard Scarry, busy town meets, you know, Dexter, basically.
Yeah, basically.
And I think part of the reason why it... I mean, that was the hook, obviously, that IDW loved.
Yeah.
And then it's been a really awesome entry point for a lot of just cold readers.
Yeah.
Be like, well, that sounds... really messed up. I'll read that.
Yeah.
And the fact, once they hear, like, it goes pretty hard, you know, into the horror part, they're like, and but the, when you're just looking at the first couple pages, they're like, it does. Like, I don't see why that would happen.
Yeah.
And so it's all of that combined, I think, worked really well in our favor. And it was just, and I mean, also, like, here's the thing though. It's a really awesome time for good comics. There's so many good comics right
there
now.
There are,
but it's incredibly hard to get people to read your comics.
Yeah, exactly.
Amidst
that, there's so many. Yeah,
and they're all awesome. Like, there's so many good comics. So, like,
you gotta pick and choose what you want.
Again,
totally
overwhelmed at, like, the fact that we're getting a second printing. I honestly was. I mean, I was hoping that we would just, like, you know, some people would like it. And it would resonate with enough people that they would, you know, want to read. You know, we would get enough people maybe that would want to read that we could kind of write out the six issues pretty high. And,
right.
I mean, I have no idea still. Like, we're only, like, issue two is just about to come out.
Okay.
So,
issue two comes out next week, I believe?
It comes out on December 13th.
Okay, cool.
So, because it got pushed for printing, for second printing of issue one. So they
got
both...
it.
If anybody wants to catch up and couldn't get their hands on issue one, that's essentially why.
How to do it.
But, which is awesome. It was a good move.
Yeah.
I'm going into this with no more assumptions at how well this is going to go continuing. I'm just very grateful for how awesome it's been so far. Big thanks, though, to, like, IDW and how heavy they pushed it. And then also for all of the excellent, like, responses we've got, yours included, like, it's been huge. Like, that stuff is huge. Also, talking with retailers and getting them interested, and then having them champion your book. Like, all that stuff is huge.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful for all the retailers who I've been in contact with, et cetera, been receptive.
Yeah, I mean, word of mouth on it is just outstanding.
I really just been super lucky.
Now, how did you come about to getting with IDW?
It was a total fluke. I made some indie horror movies.
Right.
One of them was an anthology that I wrote and directed a segment for called Southbound.
Okay.
Southbound ended up coming out through distribution from The Orchard.
Okay.
And then Paul Davidson was with The Orchard and then happened to also be tied in with IDW. And then he initially, I feel like, came on to fill in for Film TV Development.
Okay.
And then ended up coming on in a more substantial role for a couple of years. And it was during that time when they started up their originals.
Right.
And Mark Doyle came on. And then Mark Doyle had seen my stuff, I think, through Paul. And then was just like, oh, I like this stuff. And obviously, he could also write just based on the film stuff that I'd done, which he could also check out. So he was just, we talked. And it was, he was like, would you like to talk to Mark? And I was like, yes, yes, I would. And so then it was just... he was like, listen, I mean, this looks great. Like, your art looks great, and I know you can write, but just put together some pitches, and we'll see if we like anything.
Nice.
And so that's how that happened. So I put together, like, six pitches, and this was one of them. And they were immediately like, this would be great. We already love this one. Like, can we please see more from this one? So that's how it happened.
Nice. Now, I know it is a six-part miniseries. Are you going to... Is that going to be the end of this storyline altogether, yeah, or are you going to expand it later on?
I mean... I kind of feel like the name of the game is to write a complete story all in and then also have a backdoor for expanding it.
Okay.
If it does well.
Okay.
So I can do both by design. because I really didn't want to leave anything hanging.
Okay.
But then I also very much wanted to be able to continue if this does well enough and there's an appetite for it from readers. So we'll see, basically.
Kind of like in the TV, so like a backdoor pilot.
Right. Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, if this is my one and done, we do this as a trade, and that's great. I'm so grateful for it. If I get to expand it, like, that would be excellent. I would love that, too. But again, I mean, it depends. Like, if readers aren't interested in seeing more, then I completely don't want to, you know, keep barking up the tree if they're not into it. I mean, we'll see.
Yeah. Now, aside from this storyline or series, do you have anything else you're working on?
Yes. I can't talk about it.
Okay.
But I have several other books that I'm sort of, you know, putting together some development stuff for.
Okay.
So it's definitely, I mean, it's funny because, like, this is going to take me until March of next year, I think, is when I turn in the final art. And so, and then, like, dude, I need a breather because, like, this has really been rough.
Yeah.
It's been a rough schedule for me, just mainly because, like, my wife and I just had a daughter too.
Yes,
so like,
who I met.
Yeah. So, like, it's which is awesome.
Yeah.
But it's definitely, like, it's a little easier now for sure. But, like, man, when I was doing, like, issues 1 and 2, like, that was rough.
I can imagine.
So, anyway, so I get to take a breather.
Yeah.
but yeah, I'm very much in sort of slightly different. Further along with a couple of books.
Okay.
One's like a little bit of development, and the other one's like a lot more development. So, and vastly different than this.
Okay.
But I would still be writing and drawing, possibly writing, having another artist draw.
Okay.
But we're kind of waiting to see how that works out.
Nice. Now, where can people find you online? Follow what you're working on.
Sure. You can always find me at patrickhorvath.com. But then you can also find me on Instagram at catbirdplanet. Which is because they didn't have Patrick Horvath taken. And then also you can find me on Twitter, Patrick Horvath. And I'm also on Blue Sky at Patrick Horvath and wherever else.
Okay.
pops up just to hopefully stay part of the conversation.
And any last words for our listeners?
Not much. We got issue 2 coming out December 13th. And then beyond that, I just hope people are still into it.
I'm sure they will be, considering how much critical acclaim for the first issue there was.
Oh, I appreciate that. Cool. I hope so, too.
Cool. Thank you again for your time, Patrick.
Oh, thank you.
Talking Con, A Cup of Tea with an Englishman in San Diego, is a production for the Convention Collective. Follow all the latest convention news and updates, along with exclusive interviews, reviews, and articles at theconventioncollective.com. Any collaboration or show sponsorship inquiries can be sent to admin@theconventioncollective.com.